thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Did he just...
Here's John Williams.
Did he just use the F word? Hi, it's John. Downtown Chicago, 18 stories above a lovely city. Nice river and lake and buildings and a kind of patchy, foggy blue and white and gray sky over my head right now. How about you? But flurries? Did you say flurries, sir, in the forecast? Jordan Burnfield, did I hear you say flurries?
A chance of flurries. I'm hoping not.
That's not tonight.
I mean, we're reporting on baseball, so I feel like there can't be flurries yet.
It's weird because we're also reporting on hockey and the NBA now. Tough loss for the Bulls last night. And it's weird because you're watching the NBA right now knowing full well, the same with the NHL, that the championship series of these sports will be in June, right? I mean, it'll be warm again. That's how long this season is. It's just now getting cold. It'll be through cold, back to warm again before that season is over.
Yeah, and the NBA season, the playoffs start the first week of April usually and don't end till mid-June. So it is a long, long, long year. And they're only playing 82 games, not like baseball where they got to squeeze in 162.
I'll get to baseball here in a second, but so when is the flurries coming on the forecast?
Possibly Monday.
Possibly Monday. Producer Aleph, what is the average high temperature for today, please?
57 degrees, John.
Yeah, 57. By the way, July, August, September, October, give it up right now, okay? I mean, you know, it's just about over. It's October 24th. We got one more week of October. If we have some flurries, if it kind of crashes and burns at Halloween, nice job, October. September, ditto. August, got the job done. After July 4th, very nice July. June, don't even come near me. That's been the way the last 4 months have been. It's been a nice run here in Chicago. We asked you at WGNradio.com and on my Facebook page, I'm WGN King John. We have a news click, a daily web poll question. Attention sponsors, your ad could be there. It says, looks like the Cubs are hiring David Ross to be their new manager. You had three options. A, I'm all in. B, I'm all undecided. C, I'm all not in. Lauren Lapka, where are you on that one?
I would say I'm undecided as I am a White Sox fan, but I also have a weird feeling that this isn't going to go well. Just a weird gut feeling.
Burnfield, you've followed sports on this station for a long time. What do you think?
I think it's probably good, but I do have my reservations about it. So
All undecided?
A little undecided. I mean, I think that he was being groomed to be the manager for a long time, and I get why they're choosing him, but I do think that there are legitimate questions about it.
43% said I'm all in. 39% said I'm all undecided. 18% said I'm all not in. If I had to pick one, I'd probably be in the third category just because I thought Girardi would be the guy, and I've been a big Girardi fan for a long time. That makes it sound like I don't like or trust or have faith in David Ross. I just don't think he's been groomed long enough, you know, literally managing a team on a day-to-day basis. So I'm not saying bad things about David Ross. I'm just saying I'm not all in on that as a hire per se. Hey, if they win the World Series, it'll seem like a genius move. And I'll be the first to say I knew it all along. I knew they were going to win the World Series. Yesterday on the show, we visited with a guy who writes about technology and media. He was talking to us about Zuckerberg's testimony before the Congress this week. And there were a few issues we were asking him about. Should Facebook fact-check political ads? Should Facebook flag posts people put up that fact-checkers have determined to be untrue? And they're going to do that. If there's a news organization and they put up a story that Facebook determines to be untrue, then you'll still be able to see the story. You can click through, but there'll be a little post before you have to click through a little post that says fact checkers have determined that this is inaccurate information. Now, they're probably not going to do that to CNN or Breitbart or Fox News or MSNBC much. It'll probably be more state actors who create their own fake sites and generate news that tries to influence elections and you. But still, they're going down that road. But the big thing to me is, should they fact check political ads? Because you're going to be hearing them soon. You already are seeing presidential ones. And I think none of us like them, A, and then B, we don't like them for being negative, and then C, we don't like them for being not true. They can be really confusing, right? Like, well, boy, it sure sounds like the mayor said she's for killing puppies, but I didn't know that. And then you go, well, is that true or not, right? So it's you don't feel that informed when you watch political ads. So maybe Facebook should step up and, knowing the truth on some of these, edit them or flag them. So that was what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was asking Mark Zuckerberg about, lies in ads. This is spot number one, Elif. We've got four to play for you. This is AOC and Zuckerberg one on lies in political ads on Facebook.
You announced recently that the official policy of Facebook now allows politicians to pay to spread disinformation in 2020 elections and in the future. So I just want to know how far I can push this in the next year. Under your policy, you know, using census data as well, could I pay to target predominantly black zip codes and advertise them the incorrect election date?
No, Congresswoman, you couldn't. We have... Even for these policies around the newsworthiness of content that politicians say and the general principle that I believe that...
But you said you're not going to fact-check my ads.
We have... If anyone, including a politician, is saying things that can cause... That is calling for violence or could risk imminent physical harm or voter or census suppression when we roll out the census suppression policy... We will take that content down.
So you will, there is some threshold where you will fact check political advertisements. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, Congresswoman, yes, for specific things like that, where there's imminent risk of harm.
Could I run ads targeting Republicans in primaries saying that they voted for the Green New Deal?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Would I be able to run advertisements on Facebook targeting Republicans in primaries saying that they voted for the Green New Deal? I mean, if you're not fact-checking political advertisements, I'm just trying to understand the bounds here. What's fair game?
Congresswoman, I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head. I think
so probably, you don't know if I'll be able to do that?
I think probably.
Do you see a potential problem here with a complete lack of fact-checking on political advertisements?
Well, Congresswoman, I think lying is bad, and I think if you were to run an ad that had a lie, that would be bad. That's different from it being, in our position, the right thing to do to prevent your constituents or people in an election from seeing that you had lied.
Interesting point there, right? Couple of notes about what you just heard. So that's AOC and Mark Zuckerberg, and he said, well, the problem with Zuck is he's not that good at testifying even on his own behalf. I mean, I think I know what he's trying to say. He should have tapped me. I would have sat there and I would have said it better. I would have said, in very limited circumstances, we will edit or flag speech on Facebook. But it's very limited. We're going to have a very broad view of what you ought to be able to say. That's the way it is. It's the way it is on broadcast radio and TV and always has been. Facebook's going to be no different. So if you're, though, advocating something that will harm somebody or suppress voter turnout, you're telling lies that will suppress voter turnout, like posting the wrong date for the election, well, then, yeah, we will take that down. But that's it. So then she says, well, don't you think that we should point out lies? And here's the problem with his response. I mean, I hope you were able to hear that the way I did. I listened to it a few times. I hope I got this right. What Zuckerberg is saying is that it's just as well that we let the politician put something else in an ad that is not true, and then the voters see that that politician is posting something that's not true, and then we will judge that politician for it. I don't think voters pay close enough attention. I don't think I'm smart enough to always know what's true or not. We do get influenced by negative ads and lies. And Zuckerberg is like, if you just shine light on all of this, people will see the falsehoods for what they are, and they'll judge the politicians accordingly. And if that were true, false ads would have been off radio and TV years ago, but they work. So he's painted himself in a corner there. At the end of the day, maybe that doesn't even matter. He could say, and if in fact, think about this, they run false ads saying things that aren't true, and we vote for them as a result and they win the election, then we get the democracy we deserve. I mean, that's it at the end of the day. That is the truth, because otherwise you're going to cede the truth to somebody else who's going to judge it, and you and I don't know what the best judgment of somebody's statement is. So now, I don't know if I've done a better job than Zuck did, but I don't think he made that point that clear. So now AOC is on him because he hasn't given the answer that she wants. Or actually, he has given the answer that she wants.
So you won't take down lies, or you will take down lies? I think it's just a pretty simple yes or no.
Congresswoman,
I'm not talking about spin. I'm talking about actual disinformation.
Yes, in most cases, in a democracy, okay. I believe that people should be able to see for themselves what politicians that they may or may not vote for.
So you won't take them down.
Judge their character for themselves.
So you won't take, you may flag that it's wrong, but you won't take it down.
Congresswoman, it depends on the context that it shows up. Organic post, ads, okay. the treatment is a little
different. One more question.
Yeah, she's got one more question. But see, he's just trying to make that point over again, and clearly that's not the answer that she wants to hear. Although I'm still not sure that AOC wants somebody, even Facebook, to fact check political ads. Okay, so now, cut three. Sometimes a question isn't really a question.
Ads, the treatment is a little
different. One more question. In your ongoing dinner parties with far-right figures, some of who advance the conspiracy theory that white supremacy is a hoax, did you discuss so-called social media bias against conservatives, and do you believe there is a bias?
Congresswoman, so I don't remember everything that was in the question.
That's all right. I'll move on.
Hoobly Woodley. he's trying to unpack that. Because you know what he did? As soon as he heard your ongoing dinner parties with right-wing extremists or whatever, play that one for us again, Elif, at least the first part, because she's saved this for the end. She knows she has 5 minutes, and she's at about 4.5 minutes now. So whatever she says, he's not really going to get a chance to respond to anyway. This is not a question. And so he's like, what? Question number three.
Ads, the treatment is a little
one question, one more question. In your ongoing dinner parties with far-right figures, some of who advance the conspiracy theory that white supremacy is a hoax, did you discuss...
What? Wait, what? And then in the second part is the question, but he's kind of flummoxed by the first part there. Maybe you have an opinion, and maybe you're more informed on all of this than I am, but I just don't see Zuckerberg as evil. You know, social media, there's a lot of bad things out there, and maybe Facebook's part of it, but you know, he was a real smart guy in college who figured out a way to share pictures of pretty girls, and then it became Facebook, and now they're accusing him of human trafficking and putting out false ads that nobody could keep score on. And he's in over his head verbally. He's in over his head verbally. And so she's just going to have at it. All right, here's the last cut. This is AOC and Zuck. and she does make an interesting point about who will do this fact-checking, even if it's for the limited scope that he's asking for.
Can you explain why you've named the Daily Caller, a publication well-documented with ties to white supremacists, as an official fact-checker for Facebook?
Congresswoman, sure. We actually don't appoint the independent fact-checkers. They go through an independent organization called the Independent Fact-Checking Network that has a rigorous standard for who they allow to serve as a fact-checker.
So you would say that white supremacist-tied publications meet a rigorous standard for fact-checking?
Congresswoman, I would say that we're not the one assessing that standard. The International Fact-Checking Network is the one who is setting that standard.
I brought this testimony up with the Mincing Rascals. Our podcast will drop at about 5:30 this evening. It always does on Thursdays, the Mincing Rascals. And when I asked the panel, what did you think of that? The first thing that came out of their mouths was, who did his hair? Have you seen that at all? Have you seen Mark Zuckerberg's hairdo? It's a little flat and looks like he's trying to get all the mileage he can out of the remaining follicles that live up there. But that's beside the point now, isn't it? Here's my question for you. What do you think? What did you hear in that exchange? And do you have any interest or faith in anybody's ability to fact check the ads? That's troubling, this organization that's going to do the fact checking. But if all they're doing is saying, in a limited scope, some basic things that can be fact-checked. And I don't know if her information that she's putting before him is correct or not. But, I mean, here's the date of the election. We're not going to let you post, in her example, a false election date to minority groups to suppress their vote. He's going to take down voter suppression. So anybody can check that, and that can be pulled down. After that, it doesn't matter what your politics are, because they're not going to do it anyway. Zuckerberg isn't going to do it. And I'm interested in your opinion on this. I don't think they should. I don't think Facebook has any obligation. And, dude, if you go down there and you start fact-checking Elizabeth Warren or Donald Trump's ads, I mean, you know how polarized this country is. You have no hope. You have no hope in fact-checking those ads. My number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Call or text now.
I have a senior who's one of the top scorers in CPS at this moment, and he's being denied to play just as well as his teammates. And to see them hurting, as a parent, it hurts tremendously. I sat with my son. We've cried. This has been, you know, such a rough season.
I love the street cafe. I'm on a street team. I love Meryl Streep in the flick, One True Thing. I love traffic. I love the colors, yellow and green. I like talk radio when they talk about things. Let's talk about things.
A tough conversation yesterday. We were talking about the strike, how it's affecting the students. Obviously, in that case, the mom of a student who's a soccer player and one of the better in the CPS, and she's heartbroken about what's happened, so much so, and some of the teams are doing this. The CPS teams show up to their matches, the soccer games. They have the uniforms on. They're on the sideline. They're ready to play. The referee's there. They point to their team and say they forfeit because they're a CPS school. The other team wins. In fact, in her case, in her son's case, the team that won didn't even show up. They were from Evergreen Park. This team's from Chicago. The Evergreen Park team didn't even get on the bus. They were just awarded the win because this team is in the CPS. They're on strike and the kids can't play. And some of these would have been one-sided matches, but they're not being decided on the pitch. They're being decided, well, I guess, on the streets of Chicago. The teachers are still out there. That's not saying it's the teacher's fault or the CPS fault. In fact, that mom said, I'm for the teachers, but this is so sad. It's the politics of it. And my kid, who may win a scholarship, doesn't get to play. I said, well, maybe the kids who are going to win a scholarship, the coaches already know about them in college. He'll still get a scholarship. She said two things. One is some kids aren't so sure about that. And she was really talking more about just how hard the kids work all year long to be on the chess team or on the soccer team. And it's so sad to see that taken away. And those were their tears that they shed. She was telling us about that. So that's where we are today. They're still out there with their signs. It's 1:38 on WGN. About political ads, listen to this. 773, we just played back AOC and Mark Zuckerberg at that congressional hearing yesterday. That was what they are like when they're really entertaining. Not real informative. I mean, AOC, like her, hate her, but she's obviously figured out how to use her 5 minutes, not to gather so much information as just to make her point. And that's what they do all along. She hasn't been in Congress very long, and she's already got that drilled down. Anyway, 773 said, John, most politicians put out false ads all the time. I ran for office, and Mike Madigan put out misleading ads against me. Voters don't pay any attention. 708, John, I 100% agree with you. Fact-checking is the responsibility of the person receiving the information. Madigan put out false information about me, and I've never run for office in my life. He just thought he'd put it out there just to make sure. It's tragic. 708 says, John, Ryan Sandberg failed as the Phillies manager. I remember him in a Phillies uniform. I didn't remember. Jordan, do you remember that? Was Ryan Sandberg the manager of the Phillies, or was he just in their organization? Anyway, that's where that is. Hey, speaking of sports, Bill Comforti's on the phone. Hey, Bill, it's John Williams. How are you?
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
It's always good to hear you. It's always good to see you. Bill Comforti from Cobblestone.
Same here.
Hey, listen, you have told me in the past, and I wanted you to tell our audience again about this Hamlin Park annual boxing show that you and others organize. It's going to be Thursday, October 24th, which, as you may know, is today. If you don't, just make a note of that. It's at 7 o'clock tonight. This is amateur youth boxing in Chicago. Is that right, Bill?
Yes, correct. It is a great program. First of all, John, I love your show. I listen to your show every opportunity that I get.
Oh, you're nice. You're nice.
Tonight, we have in the great boxing show at the Hamlin Park. It's located 3035 North Hoyne. It's near Damon, one block south of Belmont. Free admission. We're going to have approximately 10 bouts. Nobody gets hurt. And it's a great event for the neighborhood. I've been doing this approximately 20 years. I've been 25 years of my company location. So just giving back to the neighborhood by promoting this great event.
So my image of this is, I mean, it sounds like something that would have happened 60, 70 years ago, but tough kids on the street need some direction, have them use their fisticuffs in the ring instead of on the streets. And so let's give these kids some guidance and teach them a skill and give them a great sport. And it's boxing. Is that kind of the idea here, Bill?
I agree with you 1,000%. I'd like to give you a real good example. First of all, we have a great coach, Bill Hegland, been teaching boxing for the last 40 years. We have a young man, his name is David Diaz. We started out when he was about 12 years old. We sent him to the Olympics in 96, became world champ. 2007, and right at the present time, he is the owner of a real estate company called Main Event. Very successful, not only in boxing. We're trying to teach these young people how to succeed in life.
It's funny though, because boxing, characterize how popular boxing is, Bill. It's, you know, people are talking about soccer and football and baseball and basketball. Is boxing still a sport that kids aspire to? Do you have a lot of kids signing up for that?
It's very popular. We have a lot of kids that sign up, but we have also adults that sign up, not only for young people. Also, as I say, adults, quite a few come in and just work out.
Oh, yeah, right. Actually, now that you mention it, a buddy of mine does that. He boxes with a coach, and he hits the pads. He never hits.
Sure.
Nobody ever hits him, which is a great deal for
right.
him. You pays your money, and you get to hit the other guy. And so then do these what is the age range of the people that are boxing tonight at Hamlin Park?
It could be from 12 years old to about 40 years old.
And then do they wear the helmets and the face guards and all that sort of thing?
Yes, they do. Yes.
So nobody gets hurt, as you say.
No, nobody gets hurt.
And then how do you score that? If I hit you in the face, then that's 2 points. And if I hit you in the belly, that's 1 point?
We have, this is sanctioned by the Association of Boxing. We have judges. There's a doctor, in the facility. And they score by points.
I bet it's. I can just imagine, Bill. Tell me if this is the scene. Then they're seating all the way around. There's a ring, and then out come a couple of 13-year-olds, and they're with 13-year-old arms, and they're using their skills to the best of their ability. It must be fun to watch, but maybe a little comic at times too.
Well, some of them could be their first fight. But it's a lot of fun. John, you should come tonight. I guarantee you will enjoy it.
Did you say that this is free? No, you got to pay to get in, right?
No, this is for free.
Why do you? Well, how are you going to make any money for this thing if you're not charging money?
Well, I have a flyer, which I have some great sponsors. Everything that I receive from the flyer goes to the Hamlin Park Boxing Club.
This is fun to watch. So I'm looking at the flyer, Assured Partners and Apt Electronics and Ace Edgebrook, Ace Hardware. Gosh, who do we know that owns that?
Wait a minute, is that Lou?
Is that Mr. Fix-It?
And then yes,
Cobblestone Development, of course, which is yours as well. Well, good for you. Good for you. Okay, so now the number to call, LFU, you gave me a piece of paper, I think, that has the information. And, of course, I don't know where that piece of paper is.
They could call me directly. I will give my office number, 773-661-0606.
Now, do I have to buy windows and doors or a new kitchen cabinet or anything like that?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. This is totally, totally separate. I've been doing this, as I said, 20-plus years. I enjoy it. The neighborhood's been good to me. I'm just giving back to the neighborhood. And I'd love to do things like that.
Okay, October 24th. That's tonight, 7 o'clock.
It's tonight, 7 o'clock.
The Hamlin Park Annual Boxing Show. If it's easier, Google Hamlin Park Annual Boxing Show. It's a Chicago Park District event. And Bill Comforti's behind it, of course, 773-661-0606. Have a great time.
And we're also going to have our Secretary of State there tonight, Jesse White.
Do we get to hit him, or how does that work?
No, we cannot hit him. He's doing such a great job.
Okay, fair enough then.
All right.
Good.
Thank you so much, John.
Nice job, Bill Comforti, giving back to the community there. This is Dear Abby. My friend Nan is planning her wedding and asked if I, along with our friends, would be bridesmaids. Fast forward a few months, the bride-to-be is now pregnant.
Well, first of all, she shouldn't got herself pregnant before the wedding.
Anyway, the bride-to-be is now pregnant. We're having our first get-together as a bridal party, and she wants to serve only non-alcoholic mocktails for our girls' night in. I asked the maid of honor if we could have the option of alcohol. She said no, because that's what the bride wants. Is it rude to drink in front of a pregnant bride?
It's rude to force other people not to drink just because you're pregnant.
Yeah, you got pregnant, they didn't get pregnant. I know, unless, you know, you're an alcoholic or you're so tempted by it that you'll, I mean, maybe then, sure, if you have a bona fide alcohol problem, I would respect that. But it doesn't say that here. She says, obviously, I'll honor Nan's wishes, but I'd like a second opinion. Should this no alcohol policy be in effect for all pre-wedding events? The shower, the bachelorette party? I don't even know what it is if you don't have alcohol at the bachelorette party.
Right. Or what about the wedding? You going to no open bar? In fact, no bar?
That'll be a... If you don't want people to stay very long, go the no alcohol route. You're going to save a lot of money, and you're done by 10:45.
Yeah, actually, half the people probably won't come.
I feel we're all adults, Abby, and should be able to make our own choices. It's not as if we're going to get wasted at these things. Signed, perplexed bridesmaid. Yeah, here's Abby's response. In most cases, it's not considered rude. It's not considered rude to consume alcohol in front of someone who's abstaining, although many people choose to refrain too. In this case, the bride would not have specified that she wanted no alcohol served if she was comfortable with her party drinking when she couldn't join in. Her wishes take precedence. Well, of course they do. I mean, I guess they do. But I don't know that that's... And I guess that's the answer to the question. But another question is, should she impose her sobriety on other people, her abstinence on other people? And that's a question that Abby didn't answer. If you're not all going to get cranked, I don't see the problem with it.
Right.
Besides... Say there's 12 people at the bachelorette party. Don't you want the other 11 to have fun?
Right, exactly. It's more so, yes, you should follow the bride's wishes, but think about how that makes you look as a bride.
How about this one? Dear Abby, my wife has a terrible habit of always being early, whether it's for a party, for a football game, for a picnic, for a reunion, etc. It has reached the point where friends and family no longer tell her the correct time. They want us to arrive because they don't want her there that early. Her family started it. Friends are following suit. Now she's upset because when she arrives, she isn't the first, but everybody else is happy because she's arriving when she's supposed to. And the answer is, if having been given the wrong time to arrive by multiple hosts, it hasn't dawned on her that what she's been doing isn't appreciated, she isn't going to heed anything that I could write. Okay, so she's taking a pass.
That's true. That's a weird issue.
I would completely do that, though. you know, there's two ways, three ways to be, I guess, really late, really early or on time. Brenda would be mortified if we arrived real early. I mean, we would not walk in the door early.
Yeah, it's almost, it sounds weird because you think of things like work, but it's worse to be early than late because so many people are still setting up or getting
brushing
ready.
Brushing around, brushing their teeth, maybe just having that first glass of wine themselves before they start to entertain you.
Or maybe even running to pick up the food. They're not even there.
So if you walk in, I would be cautious about that. I think it's better to be 10 minutes late. In fact, I don't think you should even be on time. I think you should be about 10, 15 minutes late. Maybe 9, 10 minutes late than 9, 10 minutes early. Mike, you're on WGN Radio. You're on the air. What do you want to say, Mike?
Yeah, so my best friend got married about 10 years ago, and the mother of the bride paid for the wedding, and because she paid for it, she would not allow any type of alcohol, even though they had to pay for an open bar. And we were all very perplexed, so as the best man and the rest of the groomsmen, we did what any good friend should do, and we tailgated in the parking lot.
Oh my God.
Wait a minute, so there was still a charge for the open bar, even though no... Really? Yep. They charged them for the open bar?
They got married on a Saturday, and the venue that they got married at was you had to purchase the bar package.
Well, they don't want to give up all that revenue, right? They want you to pay for it.
So they served three different type of lemonades, and the mother of the bride was over the moon until she found out that we were all outside tailgating.
I wonder how the groom feels about that, right? Because he's marrying into this. That's a heavy string to play. I guess the bride and groom could say, we'd rather pay for it ourselves and let our friends drink than you pay for it and us have three types of lemonade.
I think it was one of those that they were 24 and fresh out of college with a lot of college debt, and mom was paying for the dream location, so they really couldn't say much.
Wow.
So once again, as the best friend and the best man, I made sure that we took care of them.
Attaboy. Thank you, Mike.
Not a problem. Have a good day.
Appreciate the call. I didn't say attaboy, did I?
You did.
I didn't say attaboy. We're going to edit that out of the tape. The news is next into the Northwest.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Watch this.
Here's John Williams.
We are 18 stories up downtown Chicago in our Skyline studio. And our guest said, I love the view, but he's been up in a balloon 10,000 feet.
Lord have mercy.
So shoot, this is nothing. We're here today till 3. Remember, the Mincing Rascals podcast. Our award winner drops tonight at 5:30, the Mincing Rascals.
I believe there are answers in the sky. Up there is where I have found the greatest happiness.
Gentlemen, to predict the weather could save hundreds of thousands of lives.
We are scientists, not fortune tellers.
You'll get your chance. They'll realize your worth.
Miss Wren, I need to make studies of the air.
I'm not a coachman for hire.
You are the only person who could fly us higher than anyone has ever been. So will you?
It's part of the trailer for a new movie called The Aeronauts. Brenda and I and a lot of folks that were at the Chicago International Film Festival saw it last night. And what a terrific movie. It's directed by Tom Harper. You know Tom Harper for his work in Wild Rose. You know him for this other little TV show that folks seem to like called Peaky Blinders. He directed a few of the episodes in the first season of that. And he's the director of this new movie starring who you just heard there, Eddie Redmayne and Felicity Jones, Academy Award winners and nominees themselves. So welcome to Chicago and welcome to the studio. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm good. I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah. Where are you from?
I'm from London, UK.
Really? I don't pick that up. Have you been to Chicago much?
This is my first time, and I've been here for 24 hours. And so it's been short, but very sweet so far.
I saw you on stage last night before the movie, and then you were there afterwards as well. So you literally got off the plane and buzzed over to the theater, huh?
Yeah, I did. The plane was delayed because a valve in the engine bust, which is... reminded me of how precarious flight can be in the wrong way.
Yeah, you said that and nobody laughed because everybody is like, yeah, we are a little, you know, nervous sometimes about flight, but planes are fantastically safe. You did a movie called The Aeronauts and it's about ballooning, right?
Right.
It's about more than that, of course, but just tell us where you got the idea for this film.
Well, I read this amazing book called Falling Upwards by Richard Holmes, and in that book, recounts some of humans' first journeys into the skies in balloons, or gas balloons as they were then. And there are just so many remarkable things that happened to some of these early balloonists. But most of all, I was really inspired by the extraordinary lengths that people went to expand our knowledge of the world. And I found that really inspiring.
Was that what they were doing, or were they doing it for military purposes, or were they doing it for fun?
I think there was a whole range of different reasons why they were doing it. Certainly, there were some, you know, gave people great military gain because you could get up a great vantage point and see for miles around and see where the other people's, you know, cavalry or armies were. I think the people just were intrigued to see what was up there and how far they could go and just to see the world differently.
They didn't know about the jet stream.
They did not know about the jet stream.
Until they ran into it, and then they're doing 100 miles an hour the other way. And they didn't, I guess they must have known that if you go up real high, it's going to get real cold.
Well, no, they didn't. I mean, not at the time when this film was set in 1862. But they knew it got colder, but they had no idea to the extreme levels that it got cold. And so our characters in our balloon were woefully unprepared for the kind of conditions that they met.
So Felicity Jones sort of puts on shows, and she's entertainment, and she goes up in a balloon, and she's funny and popular, and then her pilot is this scientist who's interested in meteorology.
Yeah, James Glacier was a pioneering meteorologist.
He's a real person. Huh?
He's a real person, yeah.
Is she a real person? Did she exist?
She's based on a earlier pilot called Sophie Blanchard, and she was a remarkable firecracker of a woman who did acrobatics, as you mentioned, but also set off fireworks, did night flights. She was Napoleon's head of aeronauting, whatever that means. But she used to go up when he had a military procession and, you know, for propaganda purposes.
You said, I don't remember now if it displays us in the screen. I don't suppose it does. All of these things happened, or most of these things happened, maybe not at the same time. So you've conflated some stories to get through 2 hours and tell us this story.
Exactly. I mean, the real flight that it's sort of centered around, whilst being remarkable for the height that they got, to 36,000 feet without, which is higher than anyone's been.
I was going to ask you that. And so you'll reveal that. This doesn't ruin the movie. The balloon they're in goes to 36,000 feet.
Yeah, exactly.
36,000 feet.
I mean, that's pretty high.
If you fly to the plane you came over on did not go to 36,000 feet.
I mean, it's about that is about the height that the commercial airliners fly at.
Mount Everest is 29,000 feet. And they have to have oxygen just to take a step. So here's a couple of balloonists who I presume didn't have oxygen with them.
No, they did not. I mean, they weren't planning on going that high. but the truth is, they just didn't know what was up there. They, you know, nobody knew that you would get to the edge of our breathable atmosphere.
Okay, so that's sort of the arc of this story about this journey with flashbacks to their lives and what they're trying to accomplish and why they're there. I worried for you. There's not enough story here. Did you worry about that?
No, I think there were just so many extraordinary things that happened along the way. And each of them are also battling with their demons back on Earth, and they're trying to escape something from their lives. And through their relationship with each other, they sort of managed to find their place on Earth.
Tom Harper's in our studio. He's the director of The Aeronauts. It debuted at the International Film Festival in Chicago last night. It opens up in theaters across the country now, when, soon?
On December the 6th.
December the 6th?
Yeah.
And then it's Amazon Prime, so I'll be able to see it sometime afterwards on my TV, right?
Exactly. You'll be able to see it before, I think it's December 20th.
Go to the theater and see this thing. I really like the movie. I mean, it was terrific. And you see things in this movie you have never seen before. That's a fact. I mean, you've seen Star Wars spaceships fighting it out and doing fantastic things, and you've seen World War II movies. But you have not seen some people do in and on this balloon, and it's photographed so beautifully. You know how Master and Commander, they talked about how gorgeous the ocean was and how they went around the world to get just the right hues of water. Literally, they did that. Talk a little bit about what we see on this screen.
Well, we always wanted to do as much of it for real as possible. And so our starting point was, can we build a period 19th century air balloon? And it turned out we could. And the second question was, can we get our cast to go up in it? It turns out we could. And so Eddie and Felicity were remarkably adventurous. And they got in the balloon and we went up to 3,000 feet above the English countryside. And Felicity climbs out of it and sits on the hoop and does all sorts of remarkable stunts. So I was really sort of staggered by the bravery of
Felicity
the cast.
Climbed up onto the top of the basket. I mean, I know some of it is a stunt person. Maybe some of it didn't even happen. But it does look like she's climbing around that basket when you're up in the air.
That's
her. She's doing that?
That's all her. She's really was fearless. I mean, much more fearless than
I would
have been.
Little, my wife is afraid of heights. Maybe I am, too. I looked at her at some of the scenes and I thought, whew, whew. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I mean, that's how I feel about it as well.
So the balloon's going up. There's complications. They have to try and fix it. There's some climbing around on the balloon and the scaffolding and all of that. And it's just ingenious. But then, so am I looking at the actual balloon in the sky then when I'm seeing this movie?
Yeah, so we did many flights with the real balloon, capturing it above the clouds, in the clouds, with the actors. And then we also, you know, for everything that we couldn't do for real, because there are certain sequences, I don't think it ruins too much to say they go past through a storm. We clearly couldn't put the actors into the middle of a cumulonimbus cloud and see what happened. So for everything that wasn't done for real in a helicopter or in a balloon, we went around the world chasing clouds, essentially, with a camera that shot in 360 degrees. And we went to New Orleans. We went to South Africa.
Seriously?
Were in the UK. Yeah.
Don't have enough clouds in the UK? Well, maybe it's always too cloudy. Maybe you didn't get the kind of clouds you wanted, huh?
Weirdly enough, that's absolutely true. You know, trying to get the right clouds for the story was surprisingly difficult and sent us to all these far-flung places.
It paid off. It's just gorgeous to look at. And again, the adventure of fixing or going up in that balloon is just something you haven't seen before. So it's a thrill ride. And the movie doesn't wait. Movie starts and boom, within moments, you're going up. And it's very intriguing. You wonder what they're going to encounter.
I mean, we really wanted it to be like a white knuckle roller coaster ride.
Starts out that way. I mean, it's a James Bond thing in a balloon, for crying out loud.
But it's also an interesting character study because, you know, these two people are stuck in this, you know, they're very different characters and they certainly, to begin with, they don't exactly get along particularly well. And they're trapped in this confined space with no means of escape.
So they have to deal with each other as well as the elements. Can you tell on the radio the story that you all told on the stage? I don't know that it gives away much, but about what happened when the actual actors were trying to land the balloon one time?
Yes.
They died. They're both dead now. I don't know if you saw it. It's in all the papers.
I was going to say on an unfortunate occasion, it actually went really well. We did this great flight over London and the actors played out the scene. I was in a helicopter shooting from the side and it all went very well. And so we decided to come down and they were sort of coming down, gently down, but they slightly, you know, because the amazing thing about balloons is, you know, you can control going up and down, but you can't control what direction you go because you give yourself over to the wind. So they were coming gently down, but they slightly misjudged it and were going in some trees. So the pilot said to the actors, right, chuck out the sand.
You're
so
ballast.
We go up. Exactly.
Less weight, up you go, over the trees.
So they did this, and then
the pilot is hiding below the basket.
Yeah, so he can't be seen from us shooting
when you're
in
filming
helicopter.
It, yeah.
And then the pilot looked around and went white and said to Eddie and Felicity, you chucked out all the sand. And they were like, you told us to chuck out all the sand. And he's like, yeah, not all of it, because now we've got none left. So if we come down again, we're going to hit something, we've got nothing to throw out to send us up again.
Yeah.
So that meant they had to come down. They had only one more opportunity to go down, and they had to make it really count. And they came down, and they overcooked it, and they really hit the deck, and they got dragged along the floor, and they had a really bumpy landing. I say bumpy landing. Eddie and Felicity say horrendous crash. I think Felicity hit her head, and it was all a bit worrying. There
really?
Were screams, and on the plus side, we did get to use the screams in the movie, but they were absolutely fine.
Well, there's the glasses half full. The movie is there's the movie's called The Aeronauts. Tom Harper's in our studio. He's the director. I have to take a commercial break. Come back with me in a minute. Will you talk a little bit about this Peaky Blinders show as well?
Yeah, of course I will.
I mean, you're on a nice run here, my friend.
I've been lucky, yeah. It's been a good run.
Yeah. Well, we'll pick it up here in a minute. Tom Harper's in our studio. The Aeronauts is a movie you're going to start to see and hear more about. Eddie Redmayne, the Academy Award winner, Felicity Jones, who was also with him in The Theory of Everything, she herself nominated, are in this movie, The Aeronauts, directed by Tom Harper. It just opened in Chicago. You'll see it starting in December in theaters, and then maybe on Amazon Prime if you subscribe to that. So you also directed three of the first season's episodes of Peaky Blinders. What's Peaky Blinders?
Peaky Blinders is a gangster show set in Birmingham at the beginning of the 20th century that has gone on to become a worldwide sort of hit, I guess.
It's fantastic.
Thank you. I'm so pleased you like it.
Did you know it's really rich? It reminds me of The Godfather in a way, you know, this crime family that has a heart in some ways, but oh, they're brutal. The scenes, the costumes, the cinema of it. It's just, you know, I think we're living in the golden age of television. And when you watch something like this, you go, wow, I'm watching that on my TV at home. It's amazing.
Thanks. I'm so pleased you like it. I mean, when we were making it, we just had no idea of the success that it would become. It was, you know, Steve Knight, the creator, had, you know, he'd written, you know, a few of the scripts of the first series, and it was fantastic. And we had these other scripts that had been written that I was working on, because they hadn't quite written it all. And he was actually making a movie called Hummingbird at the time. And when he came back off his movie, he read some of the other scripts, and he was like, well, these scripts are great, but they're not my story, because the story is based on his family.
Really? This has got a basis in truth, huh?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I think he refers it to the myths and the legends of his family. So I think he accepts that there is a sort of a mythologized quality to the stories as they've been handed down through the generations to him.
That first season, as you're all filming it, you're doing these episodes. Do you know what the next episode and the next episode is like? How much continuity was there?
Well, often and most of the time, and if things are going, you know, as you would expect them, you would know what all the episodes in the series are. But that's often not the case as well. And in this case, because Steve came back and he thought it was not my family story, he said, right, well, I'm going to rewrite all these scripts. And so all these ones that you've been preparing, you think you're about to film, put those in the bin, and we're gonna start from scratch, which obviously put us under sort of extraordinary situation where we didn't quite know what was coming next.
A lot of violence in this show. What's it like on the set when guys are just shooting, stabbing, kicking, punching each other? What's it like on the set? Like at the end of a scene, does everybody applaud, or do they just go, whew, that was hard to watch, or is there high fives?
No, there's definitely no high fives. It's certainly not taken lightly. And I think one thing that was important, certainly to me, but I think to my colleagues who we were making it with, it was to never take the violence gratuitous, to make the violence gratuitous. Now, often there are different, in different episodes, there are different reasons for it, but certainly in the episodes that I worked on, we never took it lightly. And you know, sometimes, you know, the violence was important in the telling of the character stories to understand where they've come from and where they're going to. But it's it was always seen and never looked to be portrayed glamorously, and always in sort of a...
Well, it's not glamorous. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's gritty. It feels real. It usually feels like it has a purpose.
Exactly.
If you will. But it'd be nice if there were other ways to resolve some of these things as they get lured deeper and deeper into sort of the crime family that they become. A lot of smoking on that show. I don't know if you noticed that.
Oh, my gosh. There's so much smoking in that show. It was, I mean, poor Cillian Murphy having to smoke those terrible herbal cigarettes.
They're herbal cigarettes, right. So I understand that they're not smoking tobacco when they make movies and TVs now, but TV shows. But is there still an odor, and is it a lot for the actors to do that over and over and over again?
Oh, it's filthy. I mean, even with herbal cigarettes, it's absolutely filthy. And I do not envy him in the slightest, or any of them in the slightest.
Peaky Blinders, you directed three of the first season episodes. Your latest film is The Aeronauts. It opened in Chicago this weekend at the film festival. Everybody will see it in theaters in December. What a pleasure to meet you. You're just in Chicago for your first time. Enjoy our city.
Thank you so much. I will.
Tom Harper. Hold on to the hand so you can stick to the prayer. 2:37 on WGN. What are you doing here, Ella?
Well, I'm playing Girlpool, who is one of over 200 musical artists to have signed a letter boycotting Amazon for its affiliation with Immigration Customs Enforcement, otherwise known as ICE.
Right.
Others on the list include Immortal Technique, Downtown Boys, Priests, and more. I have my arm up like I'm conducting. I don't know.
This is kind of nice music. I didn't know that Amazon had some sort of connection with ICE, but that's what you're saying,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, it used to be you went to a movie, you listened to a song, and you didn't know about the politics of the organization or the individuals. You just said, hey, it's a nice song. Times aren't so simple anymore, are they? It's 2:38. This is WGN. Oh, yeah. Speaking of movies, so let me finish that story. So wasn't Tom Harper a delight? By the way, he looks like he's 17. He said he's going to go out to dinner and then to a jazz club in Chicago tonight or a blues club. I'll bet you he gets carded. He looks that young. This guy who's directed films around the world and three of the episodes in the first season of Peaky Blinders, which is just off the charts good. And then this new movie, The Aeronauts, with Felicity Jones and Eddie Redmayne. And it's about, if you heard any of the interview, about this scientist and this adventuress, and they go up in balloons, and it's the story of this one particular balloon flight, and then flashbacks to their demons and their life stories. It's based on a lot of truth. And in the trip that they are sort of replicating for the movie, they went up to 36,000 feet. So it's really amazing. He said that a lot of it we shot as they're in the basket, because they really did go up in the basket, not to 36,000 feet, but they had to shoot it in the balloon basket. He said, we were in a helicopter then, hovering nearby, and we're shooting it. I said, so how does that work? Like, you've got a long lens on the camera, and you're focused in on them, and we're watching them? Because it never dawned on me while I'm watching the movie, who's holding the camera? Where's that mic guy? They're in the gondola in a hot air balloon, for crying out loud. So he says, yeah, we were in a helicopter. I said, okay, but then how come I don't hear the helicopter? He said, well, we have to mute that out. I said, yeah, but I hear them doing the dialogue. He said, no, they then go back and lip sync the dialogue. I said, wait a minute. This movie's set in a basket. Half of it, they're in the basket talking. Are you telling me that all of those scenes where they're talking to each other, they went back into the studio and later lip synced it? And he said, a lot of it, yeah. I can't believe that. He says, oh, that happens all the time. Now, I know this happens, but I thought it was in particular instances. He says, there's movies now, they lip sync the whole thing. They shoot it and then they go back and then they match it up. I cannot believe that, but that explains it. And now you're going to watch this movie and look for any missed lips and you will not see them.
The detail that would have to go into the editing of that is just mind-blowing.
I know. I'm just like, oh, there's got to be a better way. Although I don't know how you would do that. They're in a balloon. How are you going to... Yeah, well, that's it. A green screen or maybe CG or something like that. I was thinking maybe they're not in a balloon or they're in a balloon and they're just faking it. But he said, no, they were up in the balloon. In fact, Felicity Jones, at some point where she's up, like climbing the ropes around the basket and reaching up to fix the balloon, she was doing that while they were up in the air. I ain't doing that. Now, I'm sure they had, I don't know, a rope around her to help her in case some sort of harness, but still, I ain't doing that. What were you saying, Producer Elif?
Someone posted on Facebook a video of, you know, those suspended in the air horizontal ladders that people run across with a harness around them,
mm-hmm.
like almost like a circus trick?
Yeah.
I saw, not a meme, but a video of somebody doing that, and then as soon as he finished it, he noticed that the harness came unhooked.
Oh, no.
And he looked at it and laughed. Would you look at that and laugh?
No, I would look at that and pee-pee my pants.
Yeah.
Or continue to pee-pee my pants. I think I would have been doing it the whole way across anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, listen, Jordan in the news said that the Chicago Teachers Union and the Chicago Public Schools have so far come to 50. I'm hearing that, and I don't know where I'm hearing that from. He said that they came to 80 different contractual agreements. Think about that. This contract is so complicated, right, that they have 80 things that they've already hammered out and 10 or so items that they have not hammered out. And of course, those 10 are probably the big ones, right? Class size, additional staffing, pay for part-timers, professional track for teachers' assistants, stuff like that. But 80 things they've resolved. This is my question. If you have a kid in the Chicago Public Schools, how are you doing today? All the talk that we've done about this, we haven't actually taken calls from parents. My number is 312-981-7200. Are you a Chicago resident? Do you have a kid who goes to one of these schools? And what are you thinking right now? Are you especially mad at the teachers? Are you especially mad at CPS? Are you mad at the mayor or Janice Jackson? Are you mad at the union heads? I don't know. And, you know, the one, I'm thinking this in part because yesterday when we had the woman on whose son is a soccer player George Washington High School, she said, I support the teachers, but I'm mad at the teachers too. I'm mad at everybody. She wasn't taking a side. She felt kind of a victim in between the two sides here. So I haven't heard a lot of parents call in. We haven't given you the chance. So this is your chance now. Just tell me where your head is, where your heart is on this thing. How's it going? 312-981-7200. Call me now. Hi. Well, I'm just sitting here looking at 2:46 on my digital clock. From Halloween through Christmas, it's a busy, fun, hectic time of year, isn't it? This is a commercial for the Joint Relief Institute, and the point is we're going to get busy right now. Maybe you're already busy throwing the football, raking the leaves, but you've got Thanksgiving coming up and Halloween. You're going to be running around Christmas shopping. None of that is done well or easily with knee pain. The Joint Relief Institute will address that. They use digital imaging. They see where your knees failed over the years. It happens. You don't have to live with the pain, though. They painlessly put a joint lubricant into the spot where your knee's compromised. I'm telling you, this works. I can guarantee you it's pain-free, too, because I've had them do it to my knees a couple times, and I didn't know when they were actually doing it. They see where the knee's compromised, then they put this fluid in there. You can watch on the screen as it happens in real time. You may choose not to, however. Anyway, it works. They've got an insurance specialist to make sure you get maximum coverage. You're on Medicare, they help you with that, too. Here's the number to call, the Joint Relief Institute. They're in Orland Park and Oak Brook, 708-888-0000, 708-888-0000, as in zero pain, or visit jointreliefinstitute.com. Jose, it's John. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Hello?
Hi, this is John. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you? My name is Jose. Here's my thoughts. I have two children who are in public school, but I'm also a property owner. I own two buildings, so I can, and I can certainly understand that each side is right. But I think the mayor is doing the right thing, that before you start raising property taxes, cut some of these departments that are duplicating certain things. And I would invite the union members, say, okay, I don't want to tax the people anymore. So here's what you do. You get the top people in the union and say, come with me, and you tell me where we should cut. You be part of the partly responsible for cutting jobs with the city. Let's all work together, because it's a lot different when you have to actually cut jobs as opposed to saying, we need this, we need that, and you don't care where it comes from. So I think that medium right there would put everybody in on the same page. You're going to have to cut, so invite the union to do some of the cutting. Say, where should we cut?
You know, I was reading in the paper today, Jose, maybe you were too, and that's interesting because the union was all about where else they can get the money. Where else can they get the money? They're going to get the money for the police. Why can't we have the money? When I get to be king, I'm going to put you in charge of the CPS CTU strikes, and I think you're onto something there. Say it's a fixed amount, and will at least you decide what gets cut? Because that's what
right.
We got to do.
I'll tell you what. You want me to cut jobs in the city? You be the one to cut them. You tell them that because you want the money for the teachers, I want you to cut them. You take their jobs away.
You just hand them the knife and say, I'll stand over here and you have at
right.
it. You just cut whatever
exactly.
you like.
Exactly. It's a lot different. It's a different dimension.
So are your kids in school, Jose?
Yeah, they are in school, but my God, I'm getting taxed to death on my bill every year. I'm really considering just selling my 4-unit, you know, because... It's just so much taxes, and the tenants don't understand. you know, why am I raising the taxes again?
Are your kids in CPS though? Are they out of school right
now? Oh yeah, they're in the public school system.
So what are they doing right now?
Well, they're one's a senior and one's a junior.
No, I mean, what are they doing?
Right now.
Yeah.
Well, my son, he's at the apartments. I have him, you know, helping the workers scrub down this, scrub down that. You know, and I say, I'll teach you something. You know, I'll teach you some hard manual labor.
He can't wait for school to get back in session, I'll bet.
That's the way I tell him. When I was in college and I used to work those summer jobs at a factory, I said to myself, thank God for college, and I used to run back to school and appreciate it, you know.
Good call, man. Thanks for joining us.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Best to your family. He's raising them right. Lisa, you're on WGN. What do you want to say?
Hey, John, how's it going? I thought Jose had some great insight there. But I wonder, because his kids are older and almost on the way out, if his children were younger, like mine, who's in kindergarten, if he would see a different perspective, which is the class size is a big thing. And we're lucky to be in a really good neighborhood and a really good CPS school, and the class sizes for the primary K through 3 are still ridiculous. 30-plus kids with one teacher. How can you get through to some of those students when, you know, my daughter comes home, she's 6, and she lets me know that there's a couple kids that are struggling to, shall we say, behave, follow the rules. So the teacher still has to take time out and address those children, and that's taking away from instructional time. You know, I think it's really easy when you're not in there and you're not seeing the hard work that they do. Not think about things like that. But for us, it's hard. We want her back in school. We want this to come to an agreement. I don't agree with everything they're asking for, but the class size is huge, and I think that only benefits the children.
So,
I know that the surrounding suburbs, Skokie, for instance, because I have family there, they're at 21 and 23 kids capped at that for their kindergarten.
And your daughter has how many kids in her class?
In my daughter or in the Skokie school?
In your daughter's Chicago?
My daughter's class has 28 kids.
And some of them have 30?
And that's low. Some have 33, 35.
It's funny because on TV last night they asked the Chicago Teachers Union vice president, they said, how many of this, because they always say 40 kids is too many. They said, how many schools have 40 kids in a class? And they didn't answer that question. I wonder if we've all latched on to that and we've decided it's worse than it is. But 33 sounds like a lot of kindergartners for one teacher to corral.
I mean, here, I know your kids are older. I have 2 young kids. Sometimes in my kitchen, I feel like I'm pulling my hair out with 2 young kids. How do you imagine times that by 30?
Do you know what the policy is at your child's school? Can the grade schoolers have cell phones?
I don't know the answer. I only have a kindergartner right now. I don't know the answer. I'm going to guess no, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, yeah. So you're not especially... I've not heard you take sides in your call to me here.
You know, because I'm frustrated that they can't come to an agreement. Again, I don't agree with everything, and I don't know all the details. There's some things they're asking for that I don't agree with. But on the class size, which seems like they can't come to an agreement on, again, we're in a privileged neighborhood and a privileged school.
You've got
I'm not okay with 28. I'm not, you know.
Yeah.
And there's some schools on the west side and south side that have 35, where they're coming from challenging homes without 2 parents.
Yep.
And that's going to be a lot harder to manage, unfortunately, than our school kindergarten. So, you know, I think about that, and we're not just fighting for our school, but I'm supporting them on, you know, the whole city, all the schools, right?
You know what else?
I don't know. I'm in the middle as far as, you know, I'm mad at everything, I guess.
Yeah. But if you had 38 kids in your class, you should definitely have a teacher's aide. And if you're in one of those challenged neighborhoods where the kids are bringing in things you and I can't imagine mentally and emotionally, you could maybe use 2 other adults in the classrooms. Well, that's not going to happen, right? They had in the paper today what those teacher's aides get. The custodians get $36,000 a year, and that's maybe starting, and that's full-time. The teacher's aides get $38,000, which said to me something about how much we value that position, and it sounds to me like we don't value it enough. I'd give the custodians more, too, for that matter, if it's a full-time job, but we just don't have the money. I'm out of time, but I really appreciate your call, Lisa. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Yeah, my best to your daughter and the schools. It's nice to hear somebody whose son or daughter goes to a Chicago public school say, it's a really good school. When you hear Chicago public schools, I think you roll your eyes and go, oh, my God, it's a disaster. And that's why they have these expensive magnet or Catholic schools. That's why people are going to Nazareth in the suburbs or Lyons Township in the suburbs, because you don't want CPS. And my suspicion is that if your kid goes to Lane Tech or whatever school her daughter goes to, some of you will say, it's actually a really good school, and we're mad at everybody. We've got to figure this thing out. So now all the phone lines are ringing. I've got 13 seconds left. So we'll take some time tomorrow to do this. Tell your family, tell your friends. I want to know how you're doing. How's it going? Now, tomorrow's Friday. We'll be doing Brightside. We'll make some time on tomorrow's show to talk a little bit more about this. But we are done with the show today. John, teachers should forego 50% of their raise to finance the classroom sizes and other issues, says 630. I don't know. The Mincing Rascals talked a lot about this today. We'll post that podcast after the show. It'll go up around 5 o'clock. Do you listen to podcasts? It's the Mincing Rascals. Hey, thanks for listening to my podcast. This is John Williams. I'm live weekdays from 1 to 3. And remember, our Mincing Rascals podcast drops Thursdays at 5. The Rascals is a round table of talkers and journalists. This year, judged best in the state by the Illinois Broadcasters Association.